Hello and welcome to episode 34 of the Book Wars podcast. It is an impromptu, very special episode of the Book War podcast because Chris is dying cosplay clothes because he's a bad planner. And at Real Baby Bird, as promised, has flown across the country specifically to be on this podcast. I'm just kidding. She's just here. But she was gracious enough to jump in and guest host with us because she has done the reading, which is awesome. So today we're going to be reading, or we're going to be discussing Lost Stars by Claudia Gray. And it'll be chapters 10 through 21, and including 21. Is that right, Kate?
That is correct.
Cool. Brenda, please say hi.
Hello, everybody.
Yay!
Woo! Before we jump in, so I'm obviously bringing us in. Kate is going to try to lead the discussion, and
oh boy,
we'll see what happens.
Oh fuck!
I have the outline open. I read some of it.
Yes, good woo. Job. I bet Miranda's read more of the outline than you.
Probably.
I have 100% read more of the outline than her.
Yeah, she's a really good reader. She read all of the books.
I know.
Today.
She does her homework, unlike some people sometimes. I'm not mentioning names or anything.
But. All right. Well, Chris doesn't do his homework because he's, for some reason, dying clothes. what are you drinking, Kate?
Sorry, I'm just like dying because he's literally has a plastic tub in the bathtub and is stirring like fabric soup, and it looks disgusting because he has to dye his stuff brown because he's making like Jedi robes and whatever the fuck, and so it's just he's just stirring
that is disgusting
clothing
disgusting
with part of the serving set that we got for our wedding. So he's just got a giant silver spoon and he is stirring clothing.
What are you drinking, Kate? You're not drinking fabric
I just
soup.
Sneak in here and say that it is a $2 stainless steel spoon from Bed Bath & Beyond. It was not a wedding gift.
Okay, it looked like our wedding spoons. I'm sorry.
No.
JK.
It is a as close to shit as we own.
Well, false alarm, guys. Anyway, I'm drinking, because this is happening in my bathroom, I'm drinking some gin today. It's called Karner Blue, and it's actually distilled in New Hampshire, and my friend who is from New Hampshire, he like went up there for Christmas one year, and every time he goes up there, he does this giant, giant liquor store run for all of us. I'm gonna get him arrested by telling you guys this, but by like saying this like in a public
no,
forum.
You're not, because that's what everybody does in New Hampshire when they go to New Hampshire.
All right, well, he just does this giant liquor store run for us. So I was like, hey, can you pick me up some gin? He's like, what kind do you want? And I'm like, whatever. So he brought me this, and it
all of it.
Basically, I have
I would
so
like
much
some all
right
of
now.
It gin.
but it tastes like apples, and it is delicious. Ooh. Yeah. Oh, and if you're wondering where the name comes from, I forgot about this because I haven't drunk this in a while because I'm like rationing it because it's delicious and they only sell it in fucking New Hampshire. But Karner Blue is a type of butterfly from New Hampshire.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
I bought a lot of beer because Miranda's here and she likes beer. So we're going to talk about our beers.
All right, go.
Okay. Hold on. Oh my God.
Oh fuck.
There we go. Go ahead, Miranda.
Okay, so I am drinking a Suicide Squeeze from Fort George Brewery in Astoria, Oregon.
I feel like I know to. Oh, great. I feel like I know all about Fort George now because you just talk about so much on the fucking podcakes.
Yes. Well, and Suicide Squeeze is a seasonal, so I ooh got it and it's one of my favorites. It's
that's
I think it's a hazy pale. I mean, it's a hazy ale. Hazy
okay
IPA. Oh my God, my brain.
Eh.
It says that she's taking it off of the thing.
It is a special edition India Pale Ale.
Yes.
All right.
It's good. It's citrusy. I'm drinking from Ecliptic again. Those were, I believe we referred to them as giving children beer at one point on this podcast. but we actually went to Ecliptic last night for the first time, which was really fun. Miranda barely remembers because she was not drinking all day. Anyway, she was. But this is probably my favorite of their beers. This is also a seasonal. It's their Phaser Hazy IPA. I think I sent you a picture of this and said I would talk about it on the podcast because it's space beer. But I'll clip it's always space beer. But this is like the one with the star can. So we'll put that shit up on the gram if we can make Chris do that.
It's always a crapshoot, you know?
Yeah.
It's fine. Chris is going to like listen to this pod later and be like, oh my God, you spent like an entire hour insulting me. And I'm like, how is this different from when you're actually on the pod?
We always do that. I hear him yelling.
He's yelling. He just yelled legit from the back, from the bathroom.
Tell it's him fine. To be quiet and make his soup.
Kik says shut the fuck up. Anyway,
God, I didn't say shut the fuck up. Okay, let's get it rolling since so we actually have Miranda here who I gave a bunch of disclaimers. This is just sorry. Let me tell you guys what headspace I'm in. I edited the pod that comes out tomorrow, and then this one will come out a week from tomorrow. Nobody needs to know dates, but I have last episode really fresh in my head, but now I'm remembering that Miranda hasn't heard it yet. So
nice.
We're recording episode 2 of this. She's literally just dropping it in the middle of it. So she has no idea what we talked about last time. But she has also only like done the beginning through 21, whereas me and Kate have read both of the whole book because of our Poppy Ashray interview that will come out at a later date.
Oh, I actually finished the whole book today. So
Miranda is a better reader than me and Kate.
It was a very slow day here in Portland, Oregon.
That's fine. It's also a quick read anyway. Okay.
Oh, so good. Well, Kate, why don't you kick us off? I have the outline open.
Proud of you. All right. So we're going to start with a really nice, light, fun topic, as we always do. Let's talk about propaganda in totalitarian governments, specifically under the Empire. So we've talked a little bit about this before, especially when we were reading Inferno Squad by Christy Golden, because Aiden's mom she's like dead now. Spoilers. Whoops. major propaganda artist for the Empire, and she was super prolific. And so we talked a little bit about how Aiden was really steeped in that world. And of course, you know, she comes from a military family and all this other stuff. But really, for perhaps the first time, we're seeing in Lost Stars how propaganda helps indoctrinate just normal people, you know, people who aren't basically imperial military royalty. We're talking about Thane and Sienna, who come from, you know, ass planet in the Outer Rim. So wanting to go into how propaganda and messaging and the way that the Empire controls how much and which kinds of news come out on the Holonet, how that shapes the opinions of the populace, and also the ways in which we see that really begin to break down in this middle section that we read.
I'm glad that we have Miranda on the pod because she is like a noted Russian hobbyist. You know things about Russia.
That's cool.
She's giving me a look like she doesn't, but she minored in Russia.
I was about to say, I was like, Miranda,
Russia
don't you know?
Knowledge.
I was about to say, Miranda, don't you know Russian?
Poorly.
good enough. It's better than I know Russian.
Yeah, same. I don't know. Propaganda is fucked.
Wow.
Yeah. It is.
Scintillating analysis from Chris and Cerisi.
Listen, it really is, especially like now that, I mean, Fox News has been an arm of the Republican Party for a long time, but it is really destructive, and I don't know things, but I know that is bad.
Yep.
It's your turn to talk.
Oh
say
my God!
Some stuff about say some stuff about propaganda.
Oh my God!
I was not aware of the themes we would be discussing before, so I did not analyze the reading as such. But I would agree that propaganda is bad.
Oh my god, this is such a goddamn shit show.
What else is new?
I mean, yeah, but this is like a special shit show. So, I think, I'm sure Miranda doesn't really, I mean, Kristen probably doesn't know the process by which we create these outlines, but basically, I first started really thinking about this when, Thane is on that planet, whose name I forget, but he,
Karavdoi.
It says it right on the outline, because I can read roll yeah. good.
Okay. So that's how you know I have the outline open.
Proud of you. God. So he's on, I'm not even drunk yet. So he's on Karavdoi, and he, you know, he's already pretty shaken by the destruction of Alderaan. And so he's starting to sort of question his loyalty to the Empire, his faith in the Empire, whether the Empire is a useful entity in the first place. And while he's there, he's just like, oh, this is such a boring assignment. Like, all I'm doing is, like, flying around, basically. And, I don't know, putting the fear of the Emperor into the hearts of the citizens of this planet. And then he has all those ideas basically turned on their head because he sees the Bodachi slaves working in the mines, and that's when he realizes to what extent the Empire is evil. Obviously, these are not the things that are like, you know, make for pretty news, or, you know, the things that go on posters or whatnot. You don't really advertise genocide as a way to get people to support you, generally speaking. But the other thing he notices is that all the people around him are frightened, and he's just like, why isn't anyone doing anything? And he realizes that it's his fault, basically, because he's the one who's been running around terrorizing the countryside. And the other thing he notices is, I mean, we see all these kids sometimes at these, like, rallies that are surrounding all these, like, hateful groups and whatnot. You know, you think about the kids who were part of the Westboro Baptist Church, and they're holding these signs like, God hates fags, and they have no idea what it says. They have no idea what it means, but they're being indoctrinated early, and that's what he finds when he comes across the slaves. There's this kid there who's really young, and he's just being like, that's what you get for betraying the Empire. And he's like, what the fuck is this? And then it kind of dawns on him, like, oh, this is what we're creating. Great.
Yeah, and let me build on that just a little bit. I think it's interesting the way that he decided, like, what his breaking point was as far as, like, loyalty to the Empire. I mean, obviously, I think he sees a lot of himself in this small child that he sees, and I think, what does he say, like, I know what bullying looks like, or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which was, like, really fucking heartbreaking. Oh, yeah. You can tell he's just really fucked up. But, you know, I think when, correct me if I'm wrong, I could just be making this up, but when he gets onto the planet, he kind of thinks, like, they must, like, the folks here must have done something wrong, or mm-hmm. something must have happened, so that the Empire, like, has a reason to do this. And that's kind of what we see, is he has that allegiance to the Empire, where his first thought is always, you know, until he becomes a rebel, this must be justified. And when that breaks, that's kind of what leads him to no longer thinking that way.
Right.
To put it very simply.
Yes. And there's even this moment where he's just like, where he just realizes, like, this is genocide. Like, literally nothing in the universe can justify genocide. Which is cheery, because the Empire does that all the fucking time.
It's a happy little thought there. Yeah. I also just think it's interesting that when he's looking, you know, he sees this kid kind of yell at the slaves, and he thinks to himself, like, this was me when I was that age. You know, you had the thing where when the Empire came to the planet that he grew up on, I do not remember the name.
Jellucan.
Yes. You know, they were just in awe of this, and they wanted to grow up and, you know, serve the Empire. They wanted to be Imperial naval officers, and, you know, he can see himself in that way too, and is starting to realize that, like, he was also indoctrinated the way that he sees it happening to this child.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there it's really twisted, that scene in the prologue where, you know, he and Sienna meet because they're want to go look at the ships, and it's like it's almost this sweet childhood moment of, oh yeah, bonding, and you love things that go zoom and stuff like that because you're a small child. And then Tarkin shows up and it's like, oh Jesus Christ, like it just gets so fucked up.
That go zoom.
I mean that's what kids like.
Oh no, I know, I'm just that was a really eloquent way to put it, honestly.
Lambda class shuttles, the fidget spinners of the Star Wars universe.
Chris, go stir your soup.
I'm here. Look, it's me.
Oh Jesus.
Chris, if you're gonna be here, you're better fucking talking to the mic.
Sorry, was I not? Here I am.
That's better.
Well, it's a different setting than it usually is, so instead of like me and Kate sitting on opposite sides, I'm just like literally just like shoving her out of the way with my face.
I mean,
so.
To be fair, wow, it's also
what a metaphor.
It's also lower than it usually is because obviously Chris is significantly taller than I am, so he's just like crouching down like, how do I talk to you guys?
That's true. It is not optimized for my being here right now.
That's because I'm tall important.
I'm important. Never disagreed.
Okay.
Kate's important.
Yeah, I am. Go stir your soup.
Miranda's important.
I wanted to add one thing.
Oh God. Why?
Just about how like, just exactly what you're talking about, how
we were having such a nice time.
I know, and I had to come ruin it. But just how you all were talking about, you know, what the little kid represents and how these acts, one after another, contribute to you being a horrible person. Like, I think it's really, it's perfect that we're reading this after from a certain point of view, because we had that whole episode where we talked about the Death Star, the soldiers and the prison guard in the Death Star. And like it's just a perfect way to see how somebody ends up with that mentality and still thinking they're the good guys. Like the prison guard sees all, you know, the horror in the universe, like heard stories about the Clone Wars and all this. And then you just, this is how it happens. You see people being marched, you know, into the mines as slaves, and you're told by people you trust that they're slaves, and you accept it. And one thing after another leads to you being that person. And I really love this book gives you that view of exactly how that happens.
So that's actually a point that actually goes really well to the next like subtopic, because, you know, it's not just Thane that we see having this change of heart. Obviously, these characters in this book are all, you know, we know them personally. They're not just faceless Imperials. They're not just stormtroopers with, you know, helmets on, and we literally never get to meet them. But, you know, we know, personally, obviously, we know Sienna, and she spends basically the entire time after the destruction of Alderaan trying to rationalize to herself why the Empire would be committing these war crimes. And then, of course, once Thane joins the Rebel Alliance. A little bit later, Kendi Idel shows up, and he finds out that she's also defected, and they have this really fucking sad conversation where Kendi gets this like one of those thousand yard stares, and she's talking about how she defected, and she's saying that like if her whole platoon hadn't also wanted to get out with her, that she probably never would have, because it's easier to follow orders, and you know, once you've done one horrible thing, that just makes it easier to do the next horrible thing, and before you know it, you're just doing a lot of fucking horrible things. And the thing that the whole discussion in the book reminded me of is that there's a lot of controversy, and there have been a lot of studies and ethical discussions about people like the SS guards at concentration camps in Nazi Germany, and how they said they were, you know, they were just following orders. You know, they just were just like trying to be, I don't know, good citizens who follow directions and shit, even though they were literally standing next to the fucking ovens. So it's just that slippery slope is interesting and also very distressing.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I super agree with that. I think you know, a lot of that conversation and kind of the conversation that goes on the whole book is, you know, Kendi did not want to let herself become numb to these terrible things that she was seeing. And Sienna is just trying to figure out if she can stay loyal to the Empire while still being aware that they're doing really terrible things like blowing up entire planets.
Yep.
It's really bad.
It sure is.
But it's also really complicated. I mean, I know
in the last episode, we talked a lot about the wrap up and what that's going to look like, which is funny because it's just because we read the book all the way through all at once. But it's really interesting, like the way that we see Sienna develop over the book, and knowing that she's like not doing, like seeing her thinking that the right thing is in direct conflict with what she wants to do and like what is the right thing that for her.
Right, totally. I think probably next episode, we're going to be talking especially about Sienna and Nash and how trauma is operating in this story, because it's Star Wars and we can't have a Star Wars story without people who have horrible, horrible PTSD. So stay tuned for that, guys, I guess.
And we can't have a Book Wars pod without talking about it either.
True. So I wanted us to kind of do a little bit of a deeper dive into Thane and Sienna's characters, because we discussed a pretty good overview of them and their backgrounds and all that, but obviously a whole lot of stuff happens in this middle section of the book. So the first of all being that Thane, of course, defects to the Rebellion, and we've already recorded our interview with, again, Poppy Ashright, who is going to come on and talk about YA and all the issues surrounding that. But one of the things she said during her interview, so I guess this is a little preview, that I really liked is that Thane is an interesting and appealing character, partially because he's a rebel, but he's a cynical rebel. You know, he's not one of those people who runs around like Harrison Dula being like, well, we have hope, so this is what is powering us and feeding us when we have no fucking food rations and our entire squadron gets blown up by TIE fighters and stuff. No, Thane's just like, well, I'm probably gonna die, but I hate the Empire and I can't just sit here and not do anything about it. But so I'm gonna join up, but every time someone mentions the Force, I'm gonna roll my eyes, and every time somebody mentions hope, I'm gonna lie on the floor and scream, and this is gonna be my life now.
He hates the Force so much.
Oh my god, so much. It's so funny.
It's really ridiculous. It's like that's the one thing you're latching on to that you hate.
He hates it so much.
He hates everything, but like he really hates the Force.
He really does. About a dollar for every time he was just like, oh god, not the Force again. I'd be, well, you know.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's also what makes him such a compelling character. You know, we have Sienna who just is like super level headed. She's like very much a realist. I don't think that she's, I definitely wouldn't put the like idealist label on her. And for most of the book, but then that's so sharply contrasted with like Thane, who is just so cranky all the time and hates everything, but he's the one who like defects. So, I mean, I think that was obviously done like on purpose. I think that makes them both really, really interesting and like strange foils to each other in like many interesting ways.
No, so I think one of the really interesting things about Thane being a cynical rebel is that he very much does not want to be part of the Rebel Alliance. You know, he doesn't, you know, have all the same ideals that everybody he meets does. He just kind of shows up and is like, wait, the Empire is hot garbage and I don't believe in the things that you do, and I, you know, think that you guys are all terrorists, but this is the only thing that I can do to stop the Empire.
Right, he just shows up and he's like, seems fake, but okay. And I love Thane, because Thane is about as grumpy as goddamn everything as I am. And while I love both Thane and Sienna a lot, I just relate to Thane so much more. And I also just wanted to mention that, so we've read a Claudia Gray book before on the pod. We've read Bloodline in episodes 4 through 8, I believe. And
yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. And one of the things she's so fucking good at doing is subverting tropes. So, you know, you have Thane the cynical rebel, or you have Ransom Castorvaux, who is the fascist cinnamon roll. You know, she's just, honestly though, she's just so good at taking types, and we expect that we know who they are and what, you know, and whether they're good or bad people just based on what they believe or how they've aligned themselves. And then she just goes and is like, nope, gonna just fuck shit up, which I'm very into.
And I think that probably brings us to our next point. I think, speaking of cynical rebel, you can't say cynical rebel without thinking about Kanan Jarrus. right after he goes blind and is just the saddest baby. He's a little bit less cynical now, I would say. Probably very less cynical.
He's certainly less cynical than he was when we met him on Gorse in A New Dawn.
Fuck yeah. But yeah, his character arc is long. But anyway, I think we wanted to compare Thane and Kanan just because they have a lot of stuff that is interesting to compare.
There sure is. So this is Chris's point that we're just hijacking because whatever, because Chris is stirring his fucking Jedi soup. So, so one of the things that Chris so brilliantly put on the outline before he ditched us to make cosplay clothes is that there are a lot of parallels in Thane and Kanan's storyline, and of course, as Keek said, in their characters. But you know, they ran from basically everything that they were raised to believe because there was no other way for them to survive. In Kanan's case, of course, is because literally he would have gotten shot in the face and died. And for Thane, he's the kind of person who, even though he's a giant cynic, he just can't find it in himself to live a life that he knows is a lie and doesn't align with what he believes. There's just such a weird amount of integrity in Thane for Sienna being the character who's all about honor and stuff, and that's also a thing that is fascinating to me.
I mean, it's interesting, too, because it's like, when a lot of times when we think about people, like, fucking off to planets, or just, like, leaving their responsibilities, cough, cough, loof, cough, 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 cough.
How did I know you were going to bring that up?
Well, because he fucks off to Dagobah.
It's true.
And Thane fucks off to a space station.
Yep.
Is that right? Okay, cool.
He sure does.
But it's like, you know, I think those are very different in our brains. I mean, we're happy, I think, because, you know, we're rooting for the rebels most of the time, because Star Wars. We're excited that he's going to be a rebel, but at the same time, you know, it has a very different feel, I think, than when Luke fucks off to Dagobah.
Right, because we know what he's leaving behind is like this fuck shit disaster after the evacuation from Hoth, and at least when Thane runs away, he's running away from pure evil, so we're just like, cool, Thane, do the thing.
Yeah, except for we don't know he's running towards the rebellion quite yet, which is also really interesting.
That's very true. Yeah, I mean, he spends an awful lot of time drifting around and helping Logara, whom I love, because
sounds familiar.
She's just
spending spending time helping people, floating around.
You're right. Kanan. No, you're completely right about that. Or even, I mean, I think we can even in this instance talk about Jyn, how she, you know, as much as she wanted to run away from the rebellion, in her case, you know, she wound up in these situations where she was just like, God damn it, morals, let me help you out, you know, that kind of thing.
No, I mean, I think it's interesting. To pull from Kristen's favorite segue, that, you know, Thane and Kanan are both running and eventually find themselves in the Empire, but, you know, they're running for different reasons. They're running kind of from the Empire, but Thane's is much more kind of about that morality. Like, he's running from the Empire because he can't be part of it and, you know, is just kind of dicking around for a bit. But Kanan has to, or he will die, because they will super kill him.
Right. And also, I mean, his brand of dicking around, just by the fact that he's force sensitive, just makes him do some unsavory things. Like become an alcoholic, you know.
But also, like, accidentally save a bunch of people and then have to abandon his life.
Yep. You know, the very, very congruent things.
And, you know, just going with that, like, when Kanan finds himself with the rebellion, he didn't really have anything stable before that. He was just drifting from planet to planet as long as it was safe to be there and kind of leaving when it was his allotted time. But Thane is leaving something that was very constant in his life. He had been dreaming of it, and he was at, you know, the Academy on Coruscant, and then had been just kind of serving in the Navy since then. And so he kind of runs off into much more of an unknown than Kanan is, because I think for Kanan it's more like he's already been floating around, not really sure what's next, and that's everyday life with the Rebellion.
That's super true. Although I will say that the one thing that Kanan kind of metaphorically runs away from is the Force. You know, of course, he just kind of super buries it, and he totally gives up the Jedi way, just goes around fucking his way across the galaxy and not being celibate in the slightest. Not that he changes that when he joins the Rebellion, la 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 la, but you know. The question that Chris had before he went to do hobbies instead of this hobby is
Star Wars related hobbies.
It's true. It's true. They are compatible hobbies. So Kanan, when he joins the Rebellion, we don't really see that moment where he joins the Rebellion, right? Because by the end of A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller, which we discussed in, I don't remember which episodes, but I'll put it in the episode description for this one. Whatever, I'm hedging. So at the end of A New Dawn, he agrees to join Hera, but he's only going to be crew. And he really only joins up because he's super infatuated with Hera, and also there's something about her that he can't put his finger on. Because he loves her, and he's just like, what are feelings? But anyway.
He catches feelings.
He sure does.
It's relatable.
Yes. But he eventually joins the Rebellion, we can probably assume, because he finds himself in agreement with Hera's ideals. Because, of course, by the beginning of Rebels, he's all in. He's running all these mercy missions and whatnot. Chris, why are you standing over me?
I'm waiting for you to get to the end of your point.
That's great. And whereas, as we were saying, Thane joins up with the Rebellion because he hates the Empire. He's, you know, there's that moment where Mon Mothma asks him, you know, you joined because you were fighting against something, but what are you fighting for? And if you don't figure out what that is, then you're going to literally crash and burn. So Chris's question was, how does that affect whether or not we view them as heroes or not? I don't know. I find them pretty heroic. I don't know what Chris is going with this question.
Does he mean both the boys, men,
mm-hmm.
children?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think Thane's particularly heroic because he has a choice to make, right?
Right.
And we know a lot of people who did not make that choice, whereas, like, Kanan is just super fucked if he doesn't stay on the run.
Sure. Right, I mean, we see from both Thane and Kendi that, I mean, it takes a lot to leave the Empire, and once you do, you know, you're always going to be on this blacklist. So, I don't know, he took a risk, and while it didn't lead him exactly towards the Rebellion immediately, he eventually wound up there. I mean, as soon as Wedge asked him, you know, is this a thing you want to do, he, like, basically slept on and was like, yeah, sounds legit.
Just to touch on the heroism thing, I don't think that he necessarily sees himself as a hero or think that he's doing heroic things, but I'm sure that other people both in the Rebellion and throughout the galaxy as a whole think he is.
That's a really important point.
Absolutely.
We've seen evidence, you know, elsewhere in the Star Wars universe, i.e. the films where, you know, Finn leaves the Empire. He was a stormtrooper. He joined the Rebellion, and people think very highly of him for doing that, which rightfully so. It's hard to leave the Empire, as you were saying. But, you know, even though it took Thane a while to get to the Rebel Alliance, it's still no small feat.
Absolutely. And, you know, just touching on your point about how other people in the galaxy view the Rebel Alliance, I mean, we've seen instances countless other parts of Star Wars media where people are running these mercy missions on behalf of the Alliance, and the people that they're helping are super fucking grateful, and why wouldn't they be? Like, they have no recourse, they have no resources, and this is all I've got, so why would you not be super fucking grateful for that?
I think that Thane also thinks that. If there is one thing that he likes about the Rebel Alliance, because God knows he doesn't like a whole lot. I think that, you know, him seeing Wedge on what planet were they on?
Oh God, I don't fucking remember.
I don't know.
Where he was with his crew just doing their mercy missions, and he was like, why are the Rebels taking the time and resources to help these people out? Like, they don't need to be doing that. They shouldn't be doing that because they're up against the entire Empire.
Absolutely. That is a great
but
point.
They are.
Yeah.
I have no idea whether or not that was in this section.
Oh, I don't it was. Either. Sorry.
It was.
Cool. Oh. Great.
It's Logara on the Mighty Oak Apocalypse, which Thane thinks is the dumbest ship name of all because he's Thane.
I know. So when we did talk a bit, me, dumb, out of order wise, we talked about Sienna's morals versus the Empire's priorities, and how those things can be so incongruent, but also so congruent because Sienna thinks that she needs to stay in the Empire above all because it was like an oath and a commitment.
Yep. I mean, Thane spent a lot of time being like, good lord, what is such a good person like Sienna doing, remaining in the Empire? Because it was during hashtag cave sex that he was like, I've been waiting to use that all episode, guys. that he says, it, you know, it's not whether you've kept faith with the Empire, it's whether the Empire has kept faith with us. And he just wonders how she doesn't understand that basically the Empire has broken whatever contract she thinks she has with it, because it's not the shit that she signed up for. You know, it's super, super fucking evil and stuff. And it's just so, of course, at odds with her strong sense of morals and her desire to help people, which is the entire reason why she joined the Imperial Navy in the first place. You know, we see her on Ivarujar, which sounds like Mustafar Part 2, which sounds horrible. she goes back and she saves civilians, even though that wasn't her mission. And she gets reprimanded for it because the Empire thinks that its resources, including its living sentient beings under its rule, are expendable. And Sienna just can't really wrap her head around that. She can't forget that behind every uniform there is a person and with a family and who has, you know, hopes and dreams.
Yeah, you know, you definitely see that, I think, with her struggling to kind of, like you said, wrap her head around the fact that while she understands and sees that everybody has value, as much as she tries to convince herself that the Empire is doing things like for the good and just kind of taking whatever means to get there, the Empire super does not give a fuck about anybody except the Emperor.
Yep.
Certainly not civilians.
Nope. Or all the admirals and moffs trying to just climb over each other.
LOL. What a fucking hot disaster after the Death Star.
I know, right?
Fucking A, man.
Oh my.
I mean, like, yeah. Also before the Death Star, but just like, fuck.
Oh yeah, like all of them just being like, we're gonna have to promote you because everybody fucking died. And I was just like, this is why you don't put all your eggs in one basket?
One big giant egg basket.
I know. I really, one of these days.
Call the Death Star.
That
and the Death Star Part 2.
Looks like
couldn't learn. That
looks like an egg and
lessons.
An unfinished egg. I swear to God, one of these days we have to talk about the Empire military strategy because, oh my God, they're so bad at it.
They're terrible at everything.
So bad. So bad at it.
I know. Least of all, The Last Jedi. What a terrible strategy. Speaking of, I'm going to make this episode 45 minutes because me and Miranda are going to go see The Last Jedi again. And we couldn't decide whether or not we were going to actually record tonight, pulling back the veil to the fourth wall.
Because, well, that's because Chris, again,
is fabric soup.
Yes.
Oh, Chris, great.
Did I join right in time for us to wrap it up?
Yeah, you can do our outro. It's the only thing we let you do. I just wanted to say a big thank you for @RealBabyBird, Miranda, for coming on the podcast.
Yes, thank you.
I know it's scary.
Yeah, all our listeners, wherever you're sitting right now, I think you should just give Real Baby Bird a big round of applause.
Listen, she stepped up to the plate super last minute because...
Yeah, guys, thanks for letting me come on and babble about a Star Wars.
I mean, that's what we're all about, dude.
I'm very excited to hear your contributions when this gets released.
It's real good.
They're very smart.
I mean, duh. All right, well, thank you for listening to another very special episode of the Book Wars Pod featuring @RealBabyBird, Miranda as our co-host. Miranda, do you want people knowing your last name?
I'm like Cher. It's a mystery.
Okay. No, you're just Miranda. You're just Miranda.
She's at Real Baby Bird. That's her entire.
But I really think this was a great episode. I think I had some great points.
Oh my God, eat my ass.
But thank you all for listening. Next week, we're going to be finishing up Lost Stars, talking about chapters 22 through the end. And, you know, the Force willing, I'll actually be on that episode. As opposed to dying fabric in my bathtub.
Well, maybe you should time your fabric dying.
Thane is rolling his eyes. You said the Force willing.
Yep, so you know. Absolutely. Anyway, hit us up on social media. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at BookWarsPod. BookWarsPod@gmail.com if you want to email us. Everybody rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. It's the best way for people to discover the show and help us climb the rankings there. Thank you for listening. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Design. For Miranda, Kate, and Kristen, I'm Chris. Thank you for listening to the Book Wars Pod, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Miranda. Thanks for filling in for me while I was failing.
Yeah, someone had to step up and carry the load, so...